right. Today on the show, we are chatting with Emily Hallman. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
Cool. Excited to have you. I'm mostly excited to have you because, I mean, for many reasons. I've read your bio of your many exploits, but I'm most concerned about talking about your Domino's pizza traverse.
I was just like, which bio and what did it say? Okay, great.
I mean, honestly, Meg, isn't that kind of like how I ended up?
Yeah. I was reading your bio out loud in the office yesterday, and that came up, and Robbie's head literally totally turned around and was like, what? And I was like,
I'm in.
Yeah, he's like, I'm part of this interview immediately.
Yeah.
Love it.
But maybe we should leave that as a teaser before we get into that, the Domino's pizza exploits. But
yeah, my first question has to be, because Allie Feller introduced us over email. So how do you know Allie?
I've known Allie for a long time now. I know Allie because we both had running blogs back when running blogs were a big thing. Oh. Remember when like everyone had a running blog? And I feel like running blogs were kind of like online dating. Like you were interacting with a lot of other people who had running blogs or people who were interacting with running blogs. And you like quickly figured out like this person is a match or this person is not so much a match. And with Allie, it was like, I love you. Like, will you be my friend? And so we quickly escalated from communicating on the internet to actually hanging out. I lived in DC at the time and she lived in New York. So it was like pretty easy hop between the two places. And I think she came down to DC to run the national half marathon, maybe one of the big halves in DC. And our real life friendship was as easy as our internet friendship. And we've been friends since then. And now neither of us has a running blog, but our friendship has outlasted the running blog era.
What years was that? When were you?
I need Allie here for years because I'm so bad at this. But let me think. I probably met Allie around like 2008 or 9.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
You what know, remember name? Like when everyone, like there was so many running blogs and people were telling you everything.
Ironically, Believe in the Run, Thomas started Believe in the Run in 2009 as a running blog.
Oh,
it just turned into something else. But yeah, go. So.
What so was my the running name blog your... turned into my friendship with Allie, which is.
Nice.
That's the best.
That's a pretty good progression there. What was the name of your blog?
Oh, it was not exciting. It was called Sweat Once a Day. It's like one of those, you like want these things to disappear forever and the internet doesn't work like that.
Yeah, that's why I asked it, so I could ensure that it didn't go away.
It's going to have a million hits today.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit further than that. When did running enter your life? Like, have you always been a runner?
I have not. I actually grew up a swimmer. I was a competitive swimmer and swam a little bit into college. Not well. I was like a D3 walk-on, but I cared a lot about swimming. But I became a runner because my mother became a runner, and I did not grow up with my mom as a runner. She was very much not a super active woman, and she had a health scare when I was a teenager. She had her gallbladder taken out, and that motivated her to like change some things about her life, including becoming more physically active. And at first that was just like she started walking, and then I think because the Hallman women are deeply competitive beings, she started race walking, and then she started doing 5Ks, 10Ks. And then the year she turned 50, she ran her first marathon. And it is very hard to watch your 50-year-old mother run a marathon after knowing her as someone who was not doing any physical activity and not feel very, very inspired to do one yourself.
Yeah.
And so I decided to run a marathon, and I did not follow the logical progression that she did of like 5K, 10K, then half. I think I maybe did like one. I think I did a half first, but and then we did my first marathon together. And I actually did the Marine Corps marathon. I didn't live in DC at the time; I lived in Vermont. But we flew down together, and my mother was on her fourth marathon, and she beat me by 20 minutes that day. I went out like a total asshole, like you do. Like I was like, I'm going to like qualify for Boston today. And then around like, I don't know, mile 12, I hit a wall. I think I had like a, I'm trying to remember if it was a 40-minute positive split or like an hour and 40-minute positive split. It was like not good. And I watched my mom run by around the halfway mark, and it was the Marine Corps Marathon, so there's so many people in it. And I see her running by with one of the pace groups, and she's just like steady, strong, knows what she's doing. And I start yelling for her like I'm a small girl, like, Mom! Like, Mom! And she didn't hear me and just kept going, and she beat me by 20 minutes. And I that did not deter me from continuing my running journey, and I kept going and got very into marathons for a while, and then transitioned into trail stuff and long distance trail stuff. But it all started with my mom running her first marathon when she turned 50.
Wow, that's super cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm also not sure I've heard anyone say they loved the marathon after their first one having an hour positive split. Like, that's the most impressive part of that, is that you came back.
Yeah. And I think I don't think I experienced a great resistance to coming back from that. I think, I don't know if anything, like being such an idiot about it made me want to redo, you know, like, yeah. I feel like especially like having been a competitive athlete, it was like, well, I can't suck that much. Like, I have to have another shot at this. And I did I liked the things like people like about the marathon. I liked like feeling like, holy shit, I don't know if I can actually get all the way through this, and then getting all the way through it. And even though it was kind of disastrous and how that was executed.
Now, you said you were living in DC at the time. How long were you, are you from the East Coast, or were you just here
I'm
for
from
school?
I'm from Vermont. I lived in DC for about 4 years, and I've been in Oregon since 2013.
Okay. So a decent amount of time. Yeah.
How'd you end up over there?
Honestly, I kind of got a little bit because of the trails. Like I was in DC when I did my first ultra. I did like a 50K outside of Philadelphia in an urban park. And I was traveling out to the West Coast a lot for work at the time. And I ran a marathon in Portland's Forest Park, which is not like the wildest, most spectacular. It's lovely, but it's not like the big mountains of Oregon. But I ran in Forest Park, and I was just like, oh my God, the trails out west, they're so amazing. And I don't know, just kind of got excited about the idea of being somewhere with a little bit more outdoor space and made my way here.
Nice.
So does that feel like home now? Is Eugene like it?
It feels pretty. I think I knew as soon as I got out here that I would be here for a long time. And I'm happy here. I love Eugene. I love Oregon. I spend a good chunk of my summers in Silverton, Colorado too, which I also love that area of Colorado and the San Juan Mountains. I think my ideal life would be like, I would live in Eugene, but have like a cute little cabin in the San Juans, which is not super accessible because everything in the San Juans is like owned by other people and very expensive. But in my ideal, like if I could have the life that I most wanted.
That's and speaking of San Juans, you ran Hard Rock. Did you run it last year or?
I ran it the last 2 years, and I'm doing it again this summer.
Nice.
Wow.
I've been very lucky. Very, very lucky.
So do you love running ultras? What's your kind of favorite type of race to run?
I do love the long distance stuff. I haven't done anything on the roads in a very long time. I mostly do long distance stuff. The last 2 years I've done Hard Rock, which is a 100-mile run through the San Juan Mountains. And I'm pretty hooked on Hard Rock right now. I'm training for it again. It's just a very like big, wild, rugged mountain run. And I kind of like that. Like, I like that tough terrain, and it's beautiful. Yeah. I love, like, I've tried to run the 100-mile run somewhere that I was not super excited about the things I was surrounded by, and it did not go super well for me. So I think I've learned that if I'm going to be out there for that long,
you're probably not in the excited. In the Camille Heron running a billion laps around the same track.
I don't think that's what I'm looking to do with my life. No.
Yeah, I don't think that's what anybody's looking to do with their life, except for Camille Heron.
Yeah, accurate. Okay, so training for a 100-miler, what does that even look like? Because I did 150-miler, and I never want to run that again or any distance over that. So explain to me how you found a love for this insanity.
Did you mostly not like the 50 miler itself, or did you not like the training? Were you doing laps of a 1 mile track? Was that the?
No. It was in the Marin Headlands. It was actually beautiful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But there was like 10,000 feet of vert, and I trained in flat Baltimore, and, we went with the North Face, and I did the really amazing thing where you wear the shoes for the first time on race day and my feet hurt at like mile three. Yeah. It was just not a great day.
This was when North Face was making questionable footwear.
Yeah. It might go better with other things at play.
Maybe I should try again, but I haven't gotten past that. And I'm like, I don't have the desire to do that. But I know like there's people like you that love it. So I'm just, help me figure this one out.
I do love it. Why do I love it? I mean, I think for me, like what I'm surrounded by is a big part of it. Like when I moved to Oregon because I got hooked on like the trails here are beautiful and I like being in the mountains. I like being in the woods. And I think now like the last marathon distance I ran, I think, was a friend was coaching this program at the Oregon State Penitentiary, working with people who were incarcerated there and on running. And this guy discovered running while he was incarcerated and decided on the day of his release, he wanted to celebrate his release by running from the like front door of the Oregon State Penitentiary to his home. And it ended up being 27 miles. And it was so cool. It was so powerful to run with him. And he had never run outside before. He had only run like in the prison yard.
I love that.
And like used like ketchup bottles for water bottles and like jelly packets for
goo.
And it was incredible. And so I joined him for this run, and we're running on like the side of a highway. And he was like, this is amazing. This is so beautiful. Like the trees. And I was just like looking around, and it obviously gave me perspective about what he was experiencing versus what I was experiencing. But I am, the experience of running 27 miles on a road for me is not one that gets me very excited or but that day was awesome because I was running with him, but like the landscape is not in the pavement, the impact is just like, it's not an enjoyable way for me to run. Whereas I think like, give me like a pack full of Domino's pizza in the pack.
Yes.
And like some chips and whatever, and like send me into the mountains with my friends. And that's like my happy place. And then I think like racing is just a way to be celebrating, spending all my time in the mountains, running around with a pack full of snacks and my friends. And I like that it's this, I mean, I think it's a similar thing that was fun about running marathons for me is it's like, it's a way to push myself. It's a way to explore what I can do and like, you know, figure out how strong I am. It just looks a little different than marathons, but, and I love that like trails have like, they're endlessly interesting. Like unless I guess you're doing a 1 mile loop around something and that's not endlessly interesting, but like there's not this like easy comparison of trails. There's so many different ways to run these distances and so many different types of terrain and conditions and like so many different factors. And so I feel like it's just also really a more interesting way to keep pushing myself because there's so much at play. And I feel like I haven't figured it out yet. Like I'm doing my third Hard Rock and I'm really excited. It feels like this puzzle that I've been picking away at for the last two summers. And I get to go back and be like, how am I putting these pieces together and what go even better for me? And
I mean, there's so many variables in the outdoors, whereas like a road race, you're pretty much going to be running, you know what you're, yeah, there's some potholes, but you're going to in Baltimore, but you're going to be running a road race. Whereas when you're running a trail race, like you said, especially because there's so many different courses and different places. Like if you run a road race in San Francisco and you run a road race in New York City, you know, aside from elevation differences, maybe they're the same thing as far as the terrain and your pacing, you know, strategies, mostly the same. But yeah, on trail racing or trail running in general, there's just so many more variables, whether that's obviously like technical terrain or more, you know, single track, again, mountains, more, you know, East Coast versus West Coast. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like kind of an endless array of options in a way, which is pretty cool.
It is. I think it's felt like that. And I think when I first got into ultra running, because I was coming from marathon running, it felt like to be good at the sport, I should, like, I did do like a stupid looped race once. And I remember a friend was like, this is like what you're good at. And I hated it. I hated that he said that. I hated that it was kind of true. Because what I was like really loving was like getting into the mountains and being in these like rugged, wild, beautiful places. And I think it's been fun that trails do offer this outlet of like pushing yourself in these ways that you're like not good at. And you're, there's not always a way to find something with trails that's like not, that's going to push you and challenge you. And I like that that exists there. And there's kind of like, endless ways to do that.
Yeah. So you brought up Domino's Pizza again. So I can't stop thinking about it. mostly because I want some right now, but also tell me about this little challenge you did. I think, was it in Eugene or was it in Portland?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was in Eugene.
Yeah. All right. So tell me what it was all about. Cause I just like saw a blip of it on your bio or something, but I don't really know the details of it and I need to know.
I mean, I think my bio advertises that I did the first known traverse of every Domino's Pizza in Eugene city limits. I think that's probably true. I don't know if there are other runners here who have embarked on that particular challenge. It came about because pizza is like a staple of mountain adventures, whether that's like backcountry skiing or mountaineering or trail running. It's like, if you're going to have a really big day, it's really likely that you're going to want a little bit more in your pack than like Goos, or I don't really like Goos period, but I like to have like a little bit of actual food if I'm going to be out there for a long time, and pizza is like a great option. And so I think through a lot of research, I've discovered that Domino's Pizza is like the best pack pizza, because it's like, it's really durable and it like really holds up. Is. It's real. It's like, and it like, I think Domino's thrives as a next day pizza too. Like it's a good leftover. It tastes good leftover and it like holds up. So that's Domino's true. Became like the, like whenever we were going out to do something, it would be like, we're getting Domino's. And that, I think because of that, we started talking about the idea of like, how fun would it be to like run to all of the Domino's in Eugene and to do something silly? Like you have to eat something at every Domino's that I think we had to eat like two things at every Domino's that we, it honestly like was not as hard as we wanted it to be. We wanted it to be kind of like real, like feel really dumb doing it. And it stayed pretty fun the whole time. But so we ran between all the Domino's in Eugene and I think it was like an 18 mile run or something. And there are four Domino's in Eugene city limits. We went to four different Domino's. We did experience that our menu ordering got more and more exciting the longer that we went on, because we felt like we needed to, like, we were like ordering like the chicken kickers and like the Cobb salad and like silly things by the end, just because like, I think it did feel a little too like, this is just like fun. We're eating pizza and running from Domino's to Domino's.
And I feel like, especially since Domino's, whenever they upgraded their pizza, this is a while ago at this point, but remember it really used to suck. And then they upgraded it to where they had the kind of like garlic Parmesan crust or whatever, you know, their current crust. And I feel like that was a like night and day difference that really changed the game. And, but you're right. Next day it is, has a more durable type substance to it. It's, you know, not too thick of a dough. So you get that like easy to pack. It's all in all pretty, you know what you should have done though? Since there's only four Domino's, maybe you have to like time, like call a couple deliveries to certain spots along the course. And then you have to hit
like Dean Karnazes it.
Yeah, you had to hit those delivery spots at the right time, and then maybe turn it into like a double challenge. I don't know. That's just if you do it again.
I do like. We were just discussing. We all did another really stupid challenge in Eugene recently. We were trying to like. Well, I had a friend who wanted to. We have a. You guys have been to Eugene, obviously, for different running gangs.
Oh yeah.
So, you know,
oh, yeah.
Spencer Butte in Eugene is like the big hill that you see from everywhere. You would recognize
that the one we ran up that I was. Is that the one I ran up that we were?
Is it like a spiral you run up it?
Kind of? There's it is. There's multiple ones. There's one that's kind of spiraly. It's like a You can start from different trailheads. It's like a 1,600 foot hill if you start from like the very bottom of.
I don't think it was that big.
No, we didn't do that. We did something much easier than that. Robbie was trying to convince us to go up this hill because it was going to have these amazing views. And we went like up this spirally winding hillside. And then like literally we were looking at nothing.
Was it Skinner?
Where are we?
Was it like.
It was okay.
Near the river?
Were we?
Yeah. It was near the river.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up and.
Hold on. But anyway, so. What you guys were doing something crazy on?
So there's this like 1,600 foot hill in town. And there's like a lot of different ways you can get up it. And one of my friends was about to move from Skinner. Yeah, was you, next time you're here, go to call me and I'll take you up. One of my friends was about to move away from Eugene, and he like had a silly bucket list of dumb things he wanted to do, and one was to Everest, the Butte. Spencer Butte, not Skinner Butte. That would be terrible. Okay. And there's like some steeper ways you can get up it. So we were trying to figure out like the way to make this happen. And I wasn't necessarily trying to Everest it that day, but I wanted to do like a kind of stupid amount of vert. And we were talking about how to like successfully support this run. And one of the things we talked about was, could we get Domino's to deliver to like the trailhead in the middle of this run? And, I think that would have been a helpful element. We ended up having one of my friend's partners came with some pizza.
Okay.
So it wasn't Domino's, but it was still good.
I like that idea though. That's good.
Will they deliver to a random spot?
The hill? Well, I think would they deliver even just to the trailhead? Like,
yeah.
You know, how close could we get them to this operation?
I was going to say, I saw this Mr. Beast video where they delivered to the top of a mountain, but I'm pretty sure they had partnered with Domino's to
checks out
to get to the top of the mountain. But you could just reference that video if you ever need to.
I might do that for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the, now that we're talking about just random bucket list and crazy things, what's the craziest run you've ever done?
The craziest, not like the dumbest, just the craziest.
I like the dumbest. I like that category too.
Mm-hmm. What is the dumbest run I've ever done? I mean, this Butte run was honestly pretty high up there. Just because we were like trying to, I ended up doing close to 20,000 feet on the Butte, just doing these 700 foot, 800 foot shots of the steepest way. And it was like a Sunday. So there's all these like families having like a nice hike up the view, and they see these like three degenerates who are just like going by them a million times. That felt dumb just because why would you do that with your life? I lost.
Why would you ruin a Sunday like that?
I mean, it was so fun, but it was also felt dumb. It was both things. It was so fun and also dumb. I think the craziest run that I've probably done was my PCT run. I ran an FKT on the 460-ish mile stretch of the Oregon PCT. And that was, I would say most people would say that was my craziest run to date.
And so for people who are listening who might not know what it sounded like, you're talking about a heart condition, but aren't familiar with trail running, but the FKT is fastest known time, and PCT is Pacific Crest Trail. Pacific Crest Trail. And you again had, so you have the fastest known time through Oregon's section of the PCT, which is wild.
Yeah. First of all, that's definitely crazy and super impressive. We also know you have a book coming out all about this. So tell us how this even came about.
Yeah. I mean, so it goes back to my mom. So my mom, like in addition to running her first marathon at 50, did all kinds of other wildly impressive things, including she learned how to, not like totally learned how to like stay afloat, but learned how to swim in a way that could get her through a triathlon the year she turned 60, so that she could do her first triathlon. So when she was 60, she learned how to like do freestyle and did her first triathlon. She also went skydiving to celebrate her birthday that same year, which is like bonkers. And then she was diagnosed with cancer when she was 65, and she continued to just, like, the way she lived through cancer was absolutely remarkable. She lived with a lot of joy. She really refused to let cancer be this totally dark thing in her life. It was obviously did bring some darkness, but she lived with a lot of courage and joy and her Andrea Hounland spirit through it. And she passed away in January 2020. And I felt very moved to do something that felt Andrea Hounland-ish, kind of in her bold, brave, wholehearted spirit. And that thing, very obviously for me, was the Oregon PCT to run it and to go after the record on it. So that was how I decided to do it. And then I did it, and I have written a book about it, which is coming out soon. And the book talks all about my run and also my mom. There are so many stories about my mom in it, and talks about grief and kind of what shines through it. And it's, I kind of say it's a story that was born from loss, but it's a lot about how to live and a lot about how my mom and that run have shaped how I live.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me because I feel like a lot of times on the AT as well, people who through hike the AT, or I'm sure it's the same for the PCT, it seems to be, there's a lot of people who have go through similar things like that, where they've had something tragic happen in their lives or had a loss or a divorce, major life change. And that's where they go. And do you feel that it was, I don't know. How do you feel like that is a common thread through a lot of people dealing with grief?
Yeah. I mean, it's true. It definitely is. I think part of it, I mean, like, through my mom's sickness and then her death, like, I was working at the time in a very, like, typical office job. And there are so many places that, like, we're not really supposed to feel our feelings. Like, I spent a lot of time, like, running to the bathroom to cry. And, like, if someone said, like, how are you? I'm lying. And, like, I'm trying to, like, stuff down all these hard emotions. Whereas, like, if you go and, like, watch a marathon, like, no one's hiding how they're feeling, right? Like, and I think the same thing is true about, like, a 100 miler. And I think there's this beautiful thing about running and about doing things outdoors, doing things on a trail, where you strip away all this external bullshit and you get to just, like, be who you are and feel what you're feeling. And I think especially, like, for me, the outdoors has been a place where I feel like I can process things in a much better, deeper way than I can if I'm, like, I don't know what, like, in an office building or whatever. Yeah. And my guess is that part of that is what it is that draws other people to do something similar. I think probably also there's something appealing about, like, when you go through something really hard, that's not of your own choosing. Like, Lauren Fleshman has this great quote. That's something like, it is a privilege to choose our suffering, or it's not exactly that, but I think, like, being able to opt into something hard after you've dealt with something that you didn't get to choose, I think also is appealing. And I think it's a mix of those things.
Yeah.
How long after you lost your mom did you start the 460 miles?
It's like 7-ish months, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what actually is the FKT? Like, how long did that take you?
It took me 7 days, 19 hours and 22 or 23 minutes. I always mess it up, but one of those.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so are you supported throughout this, or, like?
I did it supported. And I even say I did it very, very supported. I had an incredible amount of support for it. And I was very, very supported.
I mean, it's just interesting because the support and unsupported roles are so stark that, like, if you are doing it unsupported, it's really, because you can't run with somebody else, right? If you're unsupported, is that?
You can't do, like, any, like, some people even say, which I don't think everyone believes, but some people even say, like, if you're unsupported, you shouldn't, like, call a loved one or call a friend, because that's, like, receiving some support. It's, like, pretty, like, like, you're really just, and, like, the guy who wanted to do this Everest challenge actually did the same trail, Oregon PCT, unsupported, and we had wildly different experiences. Like, mine was the hardest run I've ever done, but I also had so much fun doing it and loved a lot of parts of it. He was, like, I had no fun. I experienced no pleasure on that. He was eating like Dorito butter. Like he'd like mashed up chips with olive oil and made like, just brought like jar. Cause you have to carry everything on you too. Like you can't like be getting other stuff out the, and it sounded terrible. Whereas like I was eating like Domino's and having people show up with like Dairy Queen and cold Coca-Cola. And it's very different.
I always imagine somebody doing it unsupported and just passing a random friend on the trail who starts trying to talk to them, like get away, like just like pushing them off.
Yeah, totally.
But so, how do you feel that do you feel like doing that FKT? You know, obviously you're running it at a pretty hard and tough pace, but did you still have time to reflect on and work through some of the stuff you're going through?
Yeah, I think for sure. It's funny. I did an interview on like our Portland's NPR affiliate after the run, and the host must not have been a runner. And he asked me like how I could possibly have like carried a conversation or something during any of the days. And I was like, well, I wasn't like redlining for 460 miles. That wouldn't have gone very well. I think like it was, of course, very hard, and a lot of my brain was consumed with like how to get through each day and the stuff I was facing. But I also like, I was doing it for my mom, and I feel like I was able, and like running had been this huge thing that we had shared for so long. I feel like I was able to like spend a lot of time, like thinking about her, holding her close, like imagining what, you know, how she would have been with this run, and for sure dealing with my grief. And like, not even just the run, it's like I basically had to start training for this run like immediately after my mom passed away. So running like gave me an outlet through like the rawest grief to really be like dealing with some of that. So it was pretty integral to that process.
And were you writing the whole time you were running? Like, was this book kind of like a bunch of words that started back then, or did this come about afterwards?
And writing through grief somewhat, like I don't even know, jotting stuff down as I could or wanted to. During the run itself, I like went in, I didn't necessarily plan to like write a book from this, but I thought I would want to retain some of the things that happened. And I had talked to my partner before the run about like, at the end of each day, let's sit down and reflect and I'll tell you things and we'll write them down. And then like at the end of the day, I was like, I'm going to eat macaroni and cheese in a horizontal position with like, so there wasn't so much active process, like that kind of documentation or writing on the trail. But pretty shortly after I was done, I started like I posted some like Instagram, like posts that had kind of stories about each day. And I started to jot stuff down, but yeah, during it, I was pretty much just dumb.
Did you lean on, I don't know if you're friends with her or not, but Sally McRae at all for anything like in that? Because I know that from listening to some of her podcasts and interviews, you know, she lost her mom when she was younger.
Yeah.
And it seems like there's some parallels there.
Yeah. I don't know Sally personally. We have friends in common, and I would love to sometime chat with her. I feel like we have gone through some similar stuff and have gotten into similar stuff since then. I don't know her personally. She's incredible. Okay.
Yeah. Cause I know, I wasn't sure. Cause you mentioned Cam Haynes, and I know they've done some stuff together as well. And yeah, she's obviously super inspiring trail runner. She's actually one of my favorite guests that I think we've ever had on the podcast. I felt like you reminded me, you know, some of the stuff you've been doing and things like that. Pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So like when you wrote the book, I write a lot as well. So I'm always interested in like the writing process, and I'm sure some people, you know, a lot of people's goal is to write a book someday. So like how did that work for you? What was your process in kind of putting it together?
Like logistically from like kind of draft, yeah. like
what are your habits, I guess, that kind of, you know, point A to point B to get it done?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of went through phases. I started writing it that winter, probably like December 2020-ish. I did the run in August. And I had done some like essay writing before. I had never tried to write a book, but I had kind of used the like I liked using running as a way to talk about deeper emotions and experiences. And so when I started thinking about doing that with the Oregon PCT, it pretty quickly was like, well, there's like so much here. Like, this is probably more a book than a like 1500 word essay. I don't think I had any idea what I was trying to do when I started. Like, the publishing process is, I think writing the book was a lot harder than running 460 miles. Like, there's
that was going to be one of my questions.
Yeah.
Which one was harder? Yeah.
I think writing the book, like, for so many reasons, and it, like, it really has been its own endurance event. I started writing it in December 2020, and it's coming out on May 7th, 2024. So it's been a, you know, many year journey. And it's just, when you're going through the publication process, there's the, like, it's hard to just write a book. I started off by writing a proposal. So it had like a couple of finished chapters in it, and then kind of an outline of where it was going and a bunch of other stuff. And then, like, you have to find an agent, and then you have to submit to publishers, and then you have to actually write the book, which is like going from writing 1500 word essays to going to writing a book feels a little like going from, like, I like walking around my block to, like, I'm in this marathon now. And it felt like that of just like, I don't like, this is a lot. How do I get from like mile zero to mile 26.2? So there, it was, yeah, it was a lot of overwhelm at first, but I think you get through it in the same way that you get through. I feel like I use running as a metaphor for everything, but it is a very like, you know, kind of one foot in front of the other. Like, and I think I think a thing that I did when writing the book that I hadn't done super successfully before that is very similar to running is, like, you know, when we're training for something with running, it's like you get out the door every day, no matter how you feel, whether that's like kind of crummy or the conditions aren't great or whatever, you're just like, and not every run has to feel great, but it's all helping you get toward whatever goal you're working toward. And I think the same thing happened, was helpful for me with writing, was like, I used to be like, oh, I need like the perfect, like, I like quiet mornings and I like to be in this headspace and I like to feel inspired. And it was just like, no, Emily, you put your butt in the chair and sit down at your computer every day and you write those damn words. And that's how the book happens. And you don't have to feel like it. You just show up and do it. And it does get easier, just like it does with running. It starts to flow more. And I think that really helped me with actually getting it done.
Yeah, that's cool.
Do you feel like completing the 460 miles almost made it easier to believe you could write the book? Like, you can do that, you can do this.
I think, yeah. And then just going through hard runs in general and like kind of seeing that parallel of like, you don't have to always feel good about this. You don't always, and like, but it's all helping you get from mile zero to whatever mile you're trying to get to, and appreciating that, like, the consistency, the act of showing up, the commitment, the like day in, day out, like really does help you get where you want to go, I think. Yeah. So I think, yeah, that getting through all kinds of runs helped me think about how to write a book and actually do it.
What is it about running that, because I know when I'm on a run with someone, I'm just way more open and like, we've always attributed to like, you're not face to face with someone. So like, you just feel like you can say more things and it's like not as vulnerable. You're like not making eye contact. I feel like there's something else to it. Like you're willing to be more expressive, like during a run or after a hard effort or like doing something like that. What do you think that is?
I think it kind of goes back to that. Like, you're stripping away all this other bullshit when you step onto a trail. Like, I feel like when I like walk into a party, I'm more in my like my office mode than I am when I step onto a trail and I'm like, oh, I get to just be myself here. And like, I think there's, I think the side to side theory is funny. and like that idea that like I've like run a bunch of 100 milers and I've supported friends through a bunch of 100 milers. And I really like that. When you stand on a start line of a 100 miler, there's this like recognition that you're going to go through some like fucking lows. Like, people are going to see you at your absolute lowest and you're okay with that. You're like, people are going to crew me. They're going to pace me. There are volunteers. And you're like signing this deal of like, yup, you can see my lows. And I mean, I think like similarly in a marathon too, like maybe it's not quite as much of a like guarantee and the lows aren't quite as ugly as they get at like, you know, hour 25 of a 100 miler. Yeah. But But I think there's this like willingness to be more vulnerable in running that we've all experienced. And so maybe it's like that dynamic too, that like, you know, that running is this like safe space to just like kind of be yourself, be weird, be emotional, be like whatever it is. And it makes it, you kind of strip away this bullshit, like, you know, what do you do for work question stuff that, you know, and just like.
Yeah. That's a very DC question. I could tell you live there.
Yeah.
No, I think that's true. And it's funny too. I always feel like when you're running and talking with people and just going nonstop, I'm very good at doing that. I hope I don't annoy anyone. But I feel like it's almost like it's almost like the same way you talk after you had a few drinks, where you're just like super chatty. And honestly, I never remember any of the conversation like the next week. I'm like, I don't even know. Have we met before? Oh, I talked to you for 3 hours on a long run. Okay, cool.
I told you my deepest insecurities and my most embarrassing like story from college, and who even knows what? Yeah.
Do you remember all of the, you talked about how it gets pretty dark in a 100-miler, which I think we all know. And there's dark waves in a marathon too. Like, I always say you can make any race as hard as you want it to be, really. Mm. But it's guaranteed in a 100-miler.
It's so guaranteed, like,
what tell me, scare me into not doing one. Tell me about the dark times. Like, what's happened?
Oh, I mean, I always say I feel like I like turn into a toddler when I'm running a 100-miler, and it's like, you know, I'm like standing at, like last year when I did Hard Rock, my friend Danielle was pacing me at the end. And Hard Rock, there's like 33,000 feet of climbing throughout Hard Rock. So by the end, you're just like, not another fucking hill. Like, I don't know if I can say that on this podcast, sorry, but.
Oh yeah.
You're good. You're good.
And like, there were like some hills that you know, you're just over it. And I would just look up and I'd be like, I don't want to. Like, no, don't make me do this. And like, it's just like, you turn into this like young tantrum self. I'm trying to think of like, I mean, during like the PCT, I had a day that was it was my second day, and it was a 72-mile day. And 72 miles is less than 100, but when it's your second day of 8 days, 72 miles feels like a lot. And when you're aware, like, I still have like whatever, I can't do the math right now, but over 300 miles after the 72-mile day. The 72-mile day
trails,
was like,
yeah. And on trails, that's totally different than
right.
on road.
It's like it's a lot. And the mileage that day was such a mind fuck. It was like, no matter what my watch said, it was like this like quicksand of despair that just would like yank me down. Cause like I ran like 30 miles, which is a lot of miles. And I look at my watch and I'm like, I still have 42 miles to go. And then like you do like 40 miles and you're like, I still have 30 whatever miles to go. And, I was quite low that day. And I generally like am pretty good about keeping my attitude pretty positive when I'm around other people. Like, they're being so generous to like give up their sleep and time and energy to pace me through these things. I want to like save them from dealing with like, you know, a sour toddler. But that day I was like not doing a great job of saving them from anything. And I was sharing how I felt about things. And it got especially bad in the middle. This day, I don't know how long it took me, like many, I was going until 2 a.m. or something. And, my partner paced me through the last like 18 miles of the day, and 18 miles felt like 500 million miles. Like 18 miles was so many miles. And I have, realized that, I do not work hard at all to save my partner from my foul attitudes. It's like much easier to just let him see how I'm really feeling. And so like during those miles, like he was trying to like help me keep eating, and I had like cold mashed potatoes in a bag, and I was like sitting on a log, and I was like, I hate eating. Eating is dumb. And he was like, yeah, I know, but like you have to keep, and he would say like you're looking great, and I'm like, you're lying. Like, it was hard to be anything other than like brutally honest about how low I felt in those moments. So those were some of the the dark, dark times. But I don't know, all kinds of things happen in 100 miler. Like you get my, like my first 100 miler, I'd never run through the night before. So I hallucinated a ton. I was seeing like coiled reptiles everywhere.
So that's real. Yeah. We always talk about that. I'm like, what do you mean you're hallucinating?
No, yeah, I was like, I saw, I hate snakes. And like, and we were in Southern Oregon where there are rattlesnakes. And so I think my like subconscious was like, rattlesnake, like run, hide, scream. And so I kept like jumping and screaming. And my pacer was like, what is going on? And I'd just be like, the snake. and I had never run through the night before. So I hadn't experienced sleep deprivation. So I was having a hard time with it. And all I wanted to do was take a nap. And my friend Jason was pacing me. And like his one job is to like help me keep moving one foot in front of the other. And I so desperately wanted a nap. And I really thought that it was possible that I could trick him and sneak away from him and take a nap. And I kept looking for like that boulder looks like a great spot to take a nap. And like, if I do it at this time, he'll never know. And kept like... trying to outsmart him so I could take a nap in the middle of this 100 miler. I feel like it's, again, it's just like, I tell friends who are doing their first 100 miler. I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen to you, but like something, like, it's like, I guarantee that something is going to come up that you're going to have to like fight your way through.
Yeah. What do you say to someone who's going to go do a 100 miler? Like, how do you get through the dark waves or the hallucinate? Like, how do you get through those parts?
I mean, one, I think to be prepared for it to be happening, because it's a lot easier to deal with lows when you're like mentally prepared for the fact that a low will hit than if it like blindsides you and you're like, I was expecting like puppies and rainbows from start to finish. And I think too, like if you're getting into that distance, to have some level of excitement about dealing with that stuff. Like I tried going into my first 100 miler to think like, this is part of why I'm here. And like, when the problems started to show up, to kind of like greet them with a smile and be like, okay, like, here we go. Like, how are we going to get through this? And to have some, and not that it's like so fun when you're dealing with problems, but to have like an excitement and a curiosity about how to get through them. And then I always tell people too, that like, as low as you may feel, like a cool thing about the 100 mile distance is you have the time and space for things to change. And so to like not let those lows like really drag you down and bog you down, because you can get through them and you can and will feel differently than you do in this moment. Like you don't have to live for the rest of the miles of the race in this like whatever despair, terrible state you're in.
I mean, I think I talked about this on another podcast we did, but that's my favorite thing about ultras. And I've only done, again, like Meg, 150 miler and then a handful of 50Ks. But, you know, you're not running it as hard, at least I'm not, as hard as a marathon, a road marathon. And so I feel like when you hit the wall in a marathon, like you hit the wall, like it's
totally. Totally.
But like in a ultra where you're pacing yourself, obviously probably a little bit slower, maybe power hiking the uphills, and running the downhill, stuff like that, you're still going to hit low points, but you always know that it's going to come around. Like it just does. And it's a weird, it's kind of nice, cause you can look forward to it and know that it's not, unless as long as you don't injure yourself in a terrible way, like you're going to be fine. Like if it's just a mental thing, you're going to get through it, you know?
And even if it's a physical thing, like,
kind of like that.
No,
true.
And in that same 100 miler, my first one, I think it was a hot day in Southern Oregon. I went out too fast because apparently that's a thing I do. And it's just easy to do in your first 100 miler. You don't know how fast you should be running. Mm. Probably didn't eat enough. And I totally bonked at like mile 40 something, come in like super dejected to an aid station. I feel like I can barely move. And I like sat there, let my heart rate come down, started eating some like quesadillas and guacamole, and like in 15 minutes I was like a brand new person. And I'd never experienced that before, where like you can, and you'd have the time to do that if that 15 minutes wasn't going to like ruin my race, and like you could like turn around that. And I was like, oh no, a bonk, my run's over. Like I can't do this. And it was really fun and encouraging to feel like, oh no, this can change. I can change this.
Yeah.
Whereas, in a marathon, you don't change anything. You're just there.
Yeah. And you feel like, I think there's a lot more pressure in a marathon to hit a certain time goal where, and that becomes a mental thing. It's like becomes a cycle. Then you, because if you bonk, you don't have that time to recover. And then mentally you're thinking, oh, my race is over. Like it's, I'm not going to hit my goal or whatever. So yeah.
Totally. Totally.
Do you think 100 mile is more physically or mentally challenging?
I think it's both. But I think the mental component matters more in a 100 miler. I think there's so much mental strength at play.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, you mentioned your mom went skydiving for her 60th birthday, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I saw on Instagram you posted some photos of yourself going skydiving. So tell us about that.
Yeah, that is not something I ever thought I would do in life. I'm really afraid of heights.
Oh, really? No way.
Yeah, no, I really don't like heights at all. I would rather, like, I don't know, drive blindfolded down the interstate than go skydiving. Wow. Like, no, it was like not something I planned to do. So it was the day of my mom. It would have been my mom's 70th birthday, and my mom obviously like did these huge things for her milestone birthdays, like ran a marathon, then went skydiving, did her triathlon, all this stuff. And I spent like, honestly, I think I was in bed until like 11 a.m. or noon, just kind of feeling sad about my mom. And I like hadn't really planned anything for this day. I thought I would probably go for a run, but it was wildfire season in Oregon, and where I wanted to go for a run was all smoky. And I'd just been in bed, like looking at these pictures of her other birthdays. And on her 60th birthday, she had gone skydiving, and she was just like, she was so full of excitement. Like she's like taking this plane up to take this 10,000 foot jump. And she's just like this child on Christmas morning. And I was just like, my God, my mom was just like such a badass. Like I was getting sad, and it was sweet to see these memories. And then I was finally like, I should go for a run. And it's like noon, and I take my dog and I get like a block. And I was like, man, like I should have gone skydiving today. Like a thought I've never had in my life, but I was like, that would have been a nice thing to do on my mom's 70th birthday, like her milestone birthday. And then I was like, well, you didn't think about it, Emily, so like keep going. And then I like ran another block, and then I stopped and I like Googled like skydiving Eugene.
Oh my gosh.
And something came up, and I was like, well, it's like noon. Like I can't like go skydiving today. And then I clicked on it, and like in the bottom corner, it was like call for same day jumps. And I was like,
no,
well,
That's never a button you push.
I guess I can just call. So I like called the skydiving place, and I was like, it's a Saturday. And I'm like, in the summer, I'm like, there's no way. And I was like, hi, I'm like calling, cause do you guys do like same day jumps? This woman was like, when do you want to come in? And I was like, well, when do you have time? And she's like, how far away are you? And I told her I was in Eugene, and she's like, get here at like 1 and like 30 minutes from then. And I was just like, okay, I guess I will go. So I like went back home, left my dog, got in the car. I called my brother and was like, should I go skydiving today? And he was like, do you want to go skydiving? And I was like, well, not really, but like, I just called this place. I'm like on my way. And I talked to him like the whole way there. And he was just kind of like, you know, you can like not do it. Even if you get in the plane, you can like not do it. But I just like kind of felt really called to do it that day. And so I kept going, and I think it helped that like, I had absolutely no time to think about it. Like, I think I could not have booked a skydiving trip like a month ahead of time.
Yeah.
I think I would have spent too much time in my head, like thinking about getting the door opening and jumping and all that. I think I would have freaked out and never gone. But I think as I spent no time thinking about it, talked to my brother like the whole way there, I got there. I like told this woman why I was there. She was so nice. Everyone there was so nice. I was paired up with this guy, Toshi, this like very stoked Japanese sky jumper. I guess Toshi in Japanese means something like joy or happy or stoke or something. Okay. And like, it was so fitting for him. And he was like the very best partner I could have had. And so, yeah, I got there and like learned I like watched a video telling me that I could die, and then learned how to like strap into the things you need to strap into, how to like jump out of a plane. Cause there are like techniques to jumping. Like you have to like kind of push yourself so you don't like get trapped in the plane. You have to like, you have to hold your hands away from the sides of the plane, because obviously you can't jump out of a plane if you're like death gripping the sides. And like basically every technique for jumping out of a plane is like against my deepest instincts for what to do when sitting on the side of a plane 10,000 feet in the sky. But yeah, and then I got in the plane and with Toshi, and we went up, and then they like, it all happens very fast. Like you're up, like the plane is moving very fast. And like, you have to like, you see how you're the technique for jumping out of a plane, but when a plane is moving, I think it's like 70 or 80 or maybe 100 miles an hour. I'm forgetting the number now. It's like moving so fast. So there's like wind coming in, but like also like making it feel very hard to jump out of the plane. And that came time for the door to open and to slide to the edge of the plane, and to, you have to kind of like fight the wind to get your legs out of the plane to be on this step that you need to push off from. And Toshi's like strapped to me and he's like giving me thumbs up and excited faces. And he, on the way up, he had been like, keep your eyes open. And I was like, fuck. Cause like my plan, the only way that I thought I could make it through this was to like disassociate from my body, to like close my eyes, pretend like Toshi's pushing me into an ice cream shop, and then like, you know, wake up 5 minutes later, safely parachuting closer to Earth. But I was like, okay, crap. I am here to like experience this, like my mom did. And so I kept my eyes open, and it was honestly terrifying to take the, have you guys skydived before?
No.
I'm probably not.
I would like to, but I just have it. Yeah. It sounds.
I want to know the moment you get out of the plane, like, does he jump and you're just with him, or do you have to do it?
So we were tandem. So he's like, I basically like, I'm sitting at the edge of the plane. I have to put my legs out so they're on this step. And then like, when he gives the like, okay, he's kind of like momentum pushing us out. And I have to like go with his momentum to also push my body out. And you have like the scary thing, like you, like putting your arms in and like not, like no part of me was in control of my body, like in the great blue yonder. That was like a very scary part of, and you, I think you fall at a rate of like 120 miles an hour or something. You go like almost a mile in a minute. I'm getting all the numbers wrong, but it's very fast and scary. Toshi was strapped to me, and he like kind of pushed us out of the plane, and then you're just free falling. And the free, like, I think some people find the free falling really like a nice release. And I found the free fall like very scary, because you're just like the woman who like owned this place was like, oh, I've jumped like 1,000, and she's like, the free fall is so relaxing. And I was like, this is not my experience.
Are you like thinking the whole time, there's no way this parachute's gonna open, like what's gonna happen, like I don't know, there's has to be that thinking.
I think I was like less afraid of the parachute failing and more just like aware of like the very real and terrifying speed that my body was hurtling through the sky with like nothing to stop. Like it just like, that is like a trippy experience to be free falling at that like speed and velocity. It just was, it's not how your body's meant to move.
You probably don't remember this, but like approximately how long are you free falling before the parachute opens?
I feel like you're free falling. Oh, that's a good question. I don't remember. I mean, probably like less than a minute, but it felt like
forever. Probably. Yeah.
Forever. It also, that's like, cool. I feel like that had always been one of my favorite stories about my mom. And then like actually doing it, like sitting on the side of that plane and being like, this is the scariest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And being like, my 60-year-old mom did this. Like, of her own choosing. Like, oh my God. Yeah. So like, it was like an amazing place to be on that day. Like it 100%, I'm so happy I did it. But it was very scary.
Have you gone back since then?
I have not. I would consider doing it again, but I would maybe have to disassociate from my body in some ways to do it again. I think I would again have to do it in like kind of a spontaneous way. Like it was my partner, like, he's an artist, and so he sometimes does these art markets on Saturdays, and he had gone to do that on that day. And when I when he left in the morning, I was like, oh, I'm probably gonna go for a run. And at some point he like looked up my location to see like if I was like where I had gone for my run. And it was like very clearly like at Eugene Skydivers. And he was just like, never once in your life have you.
Wow.
It's like, did you get kidnapped and you're being trafficked to like Russia?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a crazy. And we had a guest on, I guess, Steph Gardner. What was that? Like a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. She was with Solomon, and she skydives as a hobby. So she goes hundreds of trips under her belt, which is just.
She probably just like.
No, yeah. Now she just does it by herself. Yeah, she does all those things with like holding hands with people in the air. And we, I don't know. It seems a little, like, a little too much at that point.
No, I know. Like some people, for them, it's like they're running. They're like,
yeah.
This is what I do for fun. Gosh. Is I jump. I can't imagine doing that.
Well, she does all these crazy things. So she does that. She does. I think she started doing base jumping and then that's super crazy. And then just trail running, ultras and everything. And she did say that she may have reached a point where she needs to actually like take a few months off from everything because there's no like
adrenaline.
There's like no thrill factor anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy to think about.
I can't relate to the idea of getting in a plane and not feeling adrenaline.
Yeah, right.
Getting in a plane to sky jump, to skydive and not
feeling
adrenaline. That it's bonkers to me that you could reach that state.
Yeah, agreed.
Wow. Cool. Okay, I'm realizing we're over the hour mark here, so I don't want to keep you much longer, but just a couple more questions for you. Your book, To the Gorge... Who is this book for?
Ooh, great question. I haven't been asked that yet. I think this book is for, I think like runners for sure will find something in it. And I think especially like part of why I did this run was because I felt disconnected from the original things that had gotten me into running, like just wanting to push myself, wanting to do things that felt uncertain, wanting to like embrace the possibility of what I could do. And I think that this book will help people get excited about doing those things, about like giving themselves the chance to do like the most exciting thing that they've ever done with running. And I think it also is, I've been telling stories about my mom a lot throughout this conversation. I think the way that she lived and the stories in this book and what I got from my mom will definitely invite people to think about how they want to live. And so I think those are some things that I really hope that readers get out of it. And so the readers that want to read stories that excite them in that way.
I mean, Allie Feller said the same thing on your cover quote. She said, "This book will make you feel all of your biggest feelings and invite you to think about how you want to live." So yeah. I said it for you, so you don't have to.
There you go. It is full of feelings. If you're someone who like doesn't
I love really that.
Like feelings, then it's maybe not for you. But if you like both running and feelings, then it probably is more
for you. Yeah. That sounds awesome. I'm excited.
And it comes out May 7th. When? Remind me?
May 7th.
May 7th. Okay.
Yeah.
Very soon. Cool.
And but people can pre-order it now.
It's all over the place. Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Nice.
All right. Awesome. All right. Two final questions before I let you go. What is your daily trainer of choice? What is the shoe that you're putting on most right now?
I have historically been an ultra temp person. But I have lately been really liking, I think it's their Topos. I think it's the Topo Pursuit. I think that's the one that's most temp like. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a really good shoe.
Mm-hmm. I really, really liked that. I feel like it's got the Vibram bottoms, which like for the train that I'm doing is really nice. And I feel like I need the wide footbed. And it's been, it's held up. Like I've worn it on some pretty big runs and it's been really comfortable and held up. So that's those two. But I think the Topo Pursuit has been my favorite.
Yeah. It's they make awesome trail shoes. Pretty much all their trail shoes are great. So can't go wrong. But that's a good one.
Okay, and then if people want to find you now that you no longer have a running blog, which is a little disappointing, but we'll let it go. Where can they find you?
I'm pretty much everywhere as Emily Sweats. I think I'm most active on Instagram these days as Emily Sweats. Yeah.
Emily Sweats, got it.
I did check to see if you had a Substack. You do, but it's sporadic.
Yeah, I deviated away from Substack for a little bit, so I don't think Substack has my most recent stuff that I've written, but I'm going back to Substack. So, which is Trail Mix. I have a Substack called Trail Mix. So, you can find some trail stories and misadventures and feelings on my Substack as well.
I subbed to it right before the podcast, so you got an extra sub. Yeah, so cool. That's exciting.
All right, Emily, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today. This was super fun.
Emily
introduced us.
Same.
And yeah, I can't wait to read your book. I'm excited. It sounds really good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I think Allie might be my book elf that will connect me with copies of my book.
I'll just harass her until she gets me one.
Connecting friends and also spreading the book love. So yeah,
that's cool. Perfect.
Yeah,
nice. All right. Yeah, it was good talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. This was a blast. Really.